Good morning! I'm Steve Whitmire, and you're listening to the Too Much Scrolling Podcast. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for July 2nd, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
Steve, this is Chip Hessenflow.
Hey, nice to see you.
I know, this is the day after Canada Day, Steve.
Happy Canada Day to all of our friends in Canada.
And well, that's yesterday. Yeah. And then coming up, we have United States birthday.
Independence Day, July 4th. Happy Independence Day for everybody.
So this is America Week, Steve.
That's It is North America Week. That's right. Happy North America Week. We have been spending a lot of time together all weekend.
Yes.
We went to the Double Clicks on Friday. We had a great time. Thank you to the Double Clicks for putting on a great show and inviting us. Then we went to Wisconsin Comic Con Saturday, all day Saturday, and we interviewed 17 different artists, writers, and interesting people at Wisconsin Comic Con.
We're tired boys.
We were exhausted. Thanks to our executive producer, Ron, who came along with us. He had a great time.
And then last night, we saw, of course, the Deconstructing the Beatles.
Deconstructing the Beatles.
And that was great. And tonight we're going to go see the Shambag Boomers.
We're going to a baseball game tonight. This is, I don't know, how did I?
Steve, we got connections.
Oh my goodness.
That's how we do it.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week, and we had a chance to see a movie, an independent film that is very fun. This is Chasing Molly, and we've got the writer, producer, and star of that movie, Shelley Pack, with us today. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, guys. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for making us a part of this production. This movie exists, and we need to tell the world.
I really appreciate that. You know, we're an independent film. It's not a typical Hollywood movie, which I think is refreshing. That's the feedback, you know, I've gotten. As independent as we are, I'm the PR team. So you can add a PR representative to that list of things. So it's been cool because I'm actually interacting with the audience. I don't have a team of people just blasting this out. I'm actually responding to comments. I'm getting to connect with you guys, you know, and it's just been like that where it's really, you know, a movie that's outside the studio system. And I think people are really, you know, interested in that. And especially it hasn't been seen in a while where you get kind of a raw comedy like this. And so the response has been really overwhelming. And I'm just so grateful to be able to have something I'm proud of and then to have people appreciate it and, you know, take the time to comment and tell me that they like the movie. It's just been an overwhelmingly humbling experience, and I just feel very grateful, you know, to be able to look back at this whole thing and to see it all come together.
All right, so let's go back. All right, so now you're not the adult that you are. You're a young person. When was it that you said, hey, I want to be an actor, I want to be a writer, and how did you get started?
So as a very young child, I mean, we're talking like 2-3 years old, I wasn't the kid where you had to be like, come on, Shelley, why don't you do that thing you do? You know, I was the one gathering the audience. Can you dim the lights? Let me set the mood. I was always performing for people, always, at a very young age. And so I knew that I wanted to be a performer. And in high school, I was very active in sports, and I actually injured my knee. And it made me focus on what I really wanted, you know, which was to be an actress. So I got more involved in the high school plays. And in doing all of that, you know, I just set my mind that even though I was going to college, I was going to pursue acting. And I went to UCLA for college. So it's right here in Los Angeles. So
go
I was
Bruins.
Able to go Bruins. And, you know, UCLA is a great school because I got a really diverse education. But then I was also able to perform out here in Los Angeles. And I teamed up with Second City alumni, Ryan Stiles, and just like the godfathers of improv, you know, kind of came out of Second City. And they liked me, and, you know, being a young female, it was kind of like, you know, it was a man's sport, improv, you know, back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's opened up recently, but, you know, still a majority of, you know, men say that they rule comedy. So I think it was really special that they kind of took me under their wing. And that's how I kind of got my chops in improv, was performing with the best and having to swim really early on. It was a sink or swim situation. And I found love with improv. I still perform improv to this day. I think it's really important that if you love acting, to act and perform and not just focus on the, you know, monetary aspect or booking work, because that's very challenging. So, and that's why as a comedian, that's how I became a writer, because I really wanted to have my own voice. I didn't want to wait around for parts that would be right for me and to depend on other people to write that. So I wrote for myself. And after a while, I said, well, if I want to see what I'm writing, I need to become a producer and start making content.
So you made your own movie. You made this movie, Chasing Molly. Tell us all about this movie. What is this all about?
My character is a paranormal con artist. While I'm cleaning you of your demons, I'm cleaning you of your valuables.
So this is Ghostbusters as a con artist.
As a con artist, right.
Okay.
You know, if someone believes their house is haunted, I play up to that. And as I'm clearing you, you know, doing my cleansing, I'm clearing you of your valuables as well.
Ah, okay.
And then I accidentally rip off Kurt Angle, the wrestler who plays Mr. Black in the movie. And he kidnaps my partner.
Mr. Black is a kingpin. He's a bad guy in this, right?
Very bad guy, and Kurt Angle does an amazing job of nailing this bad guy character, which is cool to see him in a role that's definitely not like him, and it's not like what we've seen of him. But, you know, he's a great actor, and he's very charismatic, and he just gave it everything. Really pulled it off.
And then he kidnaps your partner in this, and that's Jim Cashman, right?
Jim Cashman, who's a comedy friend of mine. I've known him. We work really well together. And so he also happens to be very successful as an actor. He's Jamie on the Progressive commercials.
Right.
And people see him on the poster. They're like, Jamie's my hero, you know. But to me, you know, he's Jim Cashman, the killer improviser, the great actor. You know, I said, can you give me a couple days? He said, of course. And so we shot all of his scenes in a couple days. I mean, okay. That talk about being a very meticulous producer to get all of that in independent filmmaking. You don't have time because you don't have money. So right. Everything needs to be precisely and meticulously planned so that you aren't wasting any time because you just don't have it.
And then you go on the quest to kind of try to get him back. And you end up running into a number of actors and create those interactions that basically create the comedy of the show. One of the things that you also do is you run into a gentleman and there's a viral video that becomes a catalyst to a lot of comedy. Tell me a little bit about finding this video and sort of, I guess,
incorporating it into your storyline.
Exactly.
Josh Sutherland, the director of the film, he's also the producer. He shows me this video one day, doesn't say anything, just sits me down. And the video, as you know, starts out, you know, relatively typical as like a cooking show or a how-to or a do-it-yourself video. And it turns so shocking that, you know, my mouth is on the floor. They actually have videos of people's reactions to this viral video. So that's a whole other gamut of videos of just of people's reactions to this video. So I see this video. I'm disgusted. I'm like, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. And I think, how do I get this in our movie? How do I put this in Chasing Molly? And I think of my, you know, improviser friends and a very good friend of mine, Mason Brown, who plays Rodney. This is the guy. And we end up, he shows my character the video, and I have the same reaction that me, Shelley, in real life had. But we actually wanted to get the video. Mm-hmm. So we found the woman, Auntie Angel, who made the video. We find her. It took months and months and months to find this
really?
Woman. She was our Moby Dick. We could not find her. We were looking everywhere. We could not find this woman. Social media, I couldn't find her. We finally get a hold of her and we got her on the phone. And so we don't even know if she's going to let us use it. You know, we have to pay her. Mm-hmm. And so we go back and forth with the negotiations. And if you could just see you know, my partner, Josh, and I, our face when we finally locked in this video. He calls his girlfriend and he's like, I've got the best news. She's like, what? We're getting engaged. What? It's like, even better. And he talks about getting the rights to this viral video. And so it's like, it was just, that's what this whole movie has been about, because you're just two people starting at zero and just using what you have. And so when you get these moments, it's just, you feel so much more victorious because you don't have, you know, like I said, a studio like funding it and able to get these people and buy the music. We had to find every single song in that movie and license it and do all the, you know, and do all the contracts and stuff like that.
Which brings me to that. Like, there's like a techno pop song that plays in sort of towards the end of the movie. And it was just really, it was great. Where did you find, who was that artist and how did you find them?
Great. So this is actually another one of the cool stories. So that hook, the song back once again for the Renegade Master. I'm not a singer, obviously. It's a part of a Fatboy Slim song. And it turns out Fatboy Slim licensed that hook. So he's not the owner of it. So I find the guy who actually wrote that piece, that hook. And I license the hook from him. Then I get somebody else to do a different version of the song, a techno version. So it's an original song with that same hook, and we own the rights to use it in our movie.
Oh, that's a great story.
Well, I was sitting there listening going, wow, that's a great hook. That is a great kind of, it's certainly very catchy.
It's so catchy. And it's, you know, I've seen the movie thousands of times. I've sat with every edit. When it comes on, I still get excited. I'm still like, oh my God, I can't believe we've got this song. You know, again, it's just one of those things. Like, you need to be super resourceful. And if you want something bad enough, I said, I have to have this song. It's so catchy. And as it turns out, I mean, if Fatboy Slim owned this song, it wouldn't even be him owning it. You know, it'd be Sony or Universal, and we'd never be able to get the rights. But as it turns out, that hook that everyone remembers is written by, you know, one person, and he still owns the rights to that hook. So I licensed it from him and created a new song.
I was going to say, what did you learn writing this movie that's going to help you write your next movie?
Now, as I write, also as a producer. So I trim the fat, you know. I'm looking at a scene and I'm like, do I really need these characters? Like, that's a one day for an actor to come in to say one line. Is that where, you know, so I don't write things. I write them now knowing that I'm going to be making them and shooting them. So I think as a producer also, stuff like, I'm not going to pick a location that I know is going to be really hard to get or would be super noisy. Just like limiting the amount of extras that you would need for a scene if it's not necessary. You learn to trim the fat, almost like I'm editing the movie as I'm writing it, so that it's only what you need. Like, you find in Chasing Molly, we don't sit and relax. Like, it's just straight comedy, laughter till the end, and then we're out. And I kind of like that style. So for me, it's important that not only does the dialogue feel natural, and that's why I hire other improvisers, because they know how to deliver things, how people say them. It doesn't come off like acting. And then it's also important that we don't fill up the screen with fluff, you know, or like baby's breath in a, you know, in a flower bouquet. It's not nothing. It has to be
gingerbread with stuff,
or that's it, or you don't need it. Pull it.
Yeah.
So tell us about Josh Sutherland, who was the director on Chasing Molly.
Josh and I started working together a few years ago. We had met, and he's very proficient at everything behind the camera. He's worked on major film sets, so he's done everything from sound to post to directing to holding the camera. So when I hooked up with him, I kind of had everything in front of the camera, all the writing and the talent and the acting, and then he was really proficient at everything behind the camera. And we met and started talking, and I told him about the work I do working with kids with autism and other abilities. And I told him about this one student I have, and I'm like, you know, I just really want to tell his story. I've been working with this kid for, you know, 8 years, and he's very close to my heart. And so we made a short film called Dashiell, A Journey Through Autism.
Nice.
And it taught us a couple things about each other. One, I really liked working with Josh. He's very easygoing. He's competent. And again, with him, there's no fluff. Like, we don't need to, you know, I just call, we get the work done. And it's a really nice experience. And also, he's not creepy. Like, when you're working with men, you like don't want somebody, you know, who you're like just getting weird at some point, you know, and trust me, that's happened. And Josh is just completely professional. And we just worked really well together. And what he learned about me is that as a producer, I will do everything it takes to get the job done. So our movie's been screened, you know, in over 30 countries. You know, Dashiell, A Journey Through Autism has been screened at festivals all over the world. And so he saw for me like, wow, Shelley is going to get the job done. And so we said, listen, we were really successful with this short film. What's in our hearts? And it was to make a feature. And so, you know, I had another script, actually, another comedy that I had written. And we went to find investors and, you know, that whole rigmarole of people saying yes and then not going through. So long story short, I said, I can't spend another day asking people for money for this movie. I can't spend one more day doing it. Mm-hmm. Let's just something we can shoot. And then came Chasing Molly. So Chasing Molly was born out of the desire to make something. And so we started at nothing. And that's much of improv is you don't have anything. You don't have scripts. You just have to make something out of nothing. So we looked at what we had. We had this teapot that Josh had brought back from Indonesia. And it had this folklore around it where it was, you know, kind of mysterious. It could be haunted. And then I thought, okay, well, what's a comedic take on a haunting or the paranormal? And I thought, well, what if I'm a con artist that does that? And then what if the teapot's filled with something valuable and we accidentally steal that? And then it became, okay, now what if my character, she runs the gauntlet. And so each scene is filmed with me, the main character, and then another, you know, all-star actor. And I go and I meet these different people and I go on this journey. And then that way for the other actors, I only need to ask them, hey, can you give me a day? I just need, you know, a half day for your couple scenes and that's it. Because actors, what they don't have is time, especially the bigger celebrities like getting Felicia Day. Mm-hmm. Time is of the essence. So when I'm like, hey, can you give me just a few hours if you really respond to the scripts? And so Felicia, who's also a comedy friend of mine who's known my work, said, yeah, you know, when are you doing it? And I said, when you're available, you give me a day and we're going to shoot around you. So this movie wasn't shot in a traditional sense where you book out 30 days in a row and you shoot the whole thing. Mm-hmm. This was shot nights and weekends over a year and a half.
Wow.
And then another year and a half in post, because we don't, again, with budget constraints, you can't pay an editor their day rate and book them out for 60 days to edit your movie.
Sure.
You don't have that kind of budget. So you say to somebody, listen, at your pace, these hour, you know, and then they work on your movie nights and weekends and on their off time. So the movie just, it gets done, but with those constraints, you know, it takes a longer time. However, the pros are you're making an independent film and nobody is above you to say,
sure,
whoa, I like that, or I don't know, maybe you should just put that in the movie. Like, who cares? You know, we only put stuff that we thought was hilarious, or otherwise it wouldn't go in the movie. And when you're working with corporate people, they're not so worried about the outcome of the movie or the content. They want to make money.
Right.
And this movie, like, of course we want to make money, but to us, the most important is for it to be a reflection of our work. So if it wasn't quality, we spend many nights that we film stuff. It wasn't quality. You'll never see it.
Sure.
Whereas a corporate person would say, well, you got to put that in. We spent this amount of money and it's fine. Just put it in, you know, fill it up. Put it in.
So where can our listeners find out more information about this movie and also about the other projects that you're going to be working on?
So yeah, Chasing Molly, you can order on demand on your TV, iTunes, Amazon Prime, Fandango, Redbox on Demand, Vudu, Xbox, PlayStation. If you want a hard copy, Amazon.com, Best Buy.com, Target.com, Walmart.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's everywhere. We were very fortunate to sell the movie to a great distributor, Gravitas Ventures.
Sure.
And so they blast movie everywhere, and we've been so fortunate. One thing to make the movie and be in love with the product, and then another thing for somebody else to say, like, yeah, we believe in it too. This is a great film. Let's, you know, we're going to invest in it and we're going to put it out there. So that's where you can find Chasing Molly. Dashiell, A Journey Through Autism is available on YouTube for free. That movie is about spreading awareness and just really educating people on what autism is and kind of debunking the stereotypes of autism. So I recommend checking that out. And in the future, I'm going to have that comedy I was speaking about. We're going to make that one next. And we have a couple more films that we're going to make. So this is just, we're just getting started in the filmmaking.
How about you? How can we find more from you?
My name's Shelley Pack, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-P-A-C-K. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social media outlets. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, Chasing_Molly. And then you can stay posted on all the updates.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for making these independent films. I look forward to your next venture.
I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. This was so fun. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Shelley, for coming in and talking about your movie, Chasing Molly. That was great.
And you can find that on most of the streaming services.
Including our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. What else have you seen this week?
Steve, I got to see yesterday. And that was the story of, you know, basically the world wakes up and the Beatles did not exist.
A alternate universe where there is no history of John, Paul, Ringo being the Beatles, and what do we do?
And this is a light, fun movie.
Okay.
Where it could turn very dark at the end, but they don't go there.
There's one guy that remembers that there was this thing called the Beatles, and he remembers all their songs, and he goes on to stardom.
He does.
Singing their songs, right?
He does. But like I said, the movie could have gone in a very dark place, but it doesn't. This is a fun sort of light movie where, you know, just like the old times when you go to the movies and it wraps up with a bow, and it's very, very nice. The gentleman, of course, you're going to, he loves the Beatles.
Okay.
And if everybody woke up and didn't remember the Beatles, he's got to remember all the lyrics. And so he puts it all together, and of course, everyone embraces it.
Okay.
Like everyone else would. And there's a number of other things that are like little twists and stuff like that. I don't want to spoil this. This, like I said, this is the kind of one of those little fun movies you go to and you go, that was kind of light and fun. And also, I would say it's very British. And
interesting.
And it's not. And here's the deal. Many American films, Hollywood films, they, when you start getting into comedy, there's a vulgar element to it,
mm-hmm.
where they go down this like,
let's do something completely off color, completely out of norm, and that's funny, that's comedy that way.
Yeah, it's sort of a shocking thing.
Yeah.
This type of comedy is not like that. Everyone is dressed as normal people would dress, very kind of reserved.
Okay.
And the story and the comedy, very, it's not Edgar Wright, but it's got sort of that kind of like, that's kind of fun. And they certainly played well off each other. Bravo. Good job. I say 60 out of 100 out of this. I think many people will enjoy this.
You would suggest it to several people to go to the movie theater, not to wait for Netflix on this one.
If you were going to go to a film and you wanted to see something, once again, not challenging.
Okay.
And not childlike. This is kind of just a fun movie. And if you wanted something that teenagers could enjoy too, this would be fine.
You also got a chance to see The Extraordinary Journey of the Fakir.
Now,
tell me about this one.
So a fakir is maybe in Hindu, mm-hmm. In thinking of India, sort of a wise man, maybe a little mystical. He's got like magic powers.
Okay.
Okay. All so right. That is
not quite a genie.
No.
This is
not
Will Smith.
No, this guy has got like the touch.
Okay.
And so the other part I need to tell you about this is that Mr. Patel, who stars in this, he goes on a journey and he's telling a story. And so when you tell a story, you tend to, well, it seems to be fantastical.
Okay.
Right?
Maybe add a little bit to the story.
Yeah. How about that for making up a word? Yeah. Sort of a Forrest Gump's Big Fishes type story that is a tall tale and everything kind of happens a little too miraculously, and of course the love story is going to end with a bow.
Okay.
But at the same time, you're going on this journey. And just like you go on the Big Fish journey or the Forrest Gump journey, everything he touches sort of has something magical with it. And what I will say about this is in the Hindu tradition, there is this idea of karma. Mm-hmm. And so when life gives you challenges, the deal is to accept the moment, but also be aware that things can change. And there's no scene that better illustrates this than when he gets deported. So the idea is this gentleman from India is going to go on his journey. He goes to Paris. And the first place he goes is, of course, IKEA, which they do not name as IKEA.
But this big box, blue and yellow store.
And it's, you know, everything is in Scandi.
IKEA, yeah.
And he decides he's going to spend the night there. Basically, it's thrown in a like a wardrobe. But, of course, that wardrobe has been sold. And he heads off to, to London.
Okay.
But and it gets deported. That's ultimately what comes out of it. So he's sitting in this airport, and they're sort of lost between towns. He doesn't have a passport. He can't move. He's just kind of stuck there. And the Spanish government and the English government are kind of fighting over this, like who's going to take these people.
Okay.
So he's mopping the floor. He's helping the people who are with them. He's doing all the things he can, recognizing he's in a situation that's out of his control. But the symbol of this is he keeps going to this door and kind of trying to see if he could open it.
Mm-hmm.
And so every day, you know, he does something nice. Every day he tries to open the door. And ultimately the door opens. And that is part of the story, is that you can give and give and give. And be, you know, being a good person means maybe bad things happen to you. But also recognizing that you have a part to play in this, you have to go and check the doors. Mm-hmm. And so this entire film is going to be one that most people will miss.
Yep.
But when you get an opportunity to watch it, you'll go, wow, that was light. That was pleasant. That was fun. And certainly...
And full of those metaphors. That's a very interesting metaphor that you had this epiphany where you noticed this metaphor when you said it out loud to me. And you go, oh, now I understand what this means. There's something more to this movie than just the action on the screen.
And he keeps running into cows everywhere. And there's cow pictures and everything. It's really kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of this fantastical story... and they're walking away, this gentleman turns to him and goes, well, is that a true story? And he said, only the important parts.
It's beautiful.
So that may be like the most
wonderful
thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I say 65 out of 100, and I think many people enjoy this.
And a lot of people are not going to see this one. They're going to miss this one. So try not to miss this one. Find it. It's called The Extraordinary Journey of the Fakir.
And there are not many theaters showing this.
Okay.
So, and that's why you'll have to seek it out.
It's another non-American film.
Well, I guess so. Maybe a British gentleman.
The director's from Quebec, Canada.
Well, there you go.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
So interesting.
Well, you know, on Canada Day being yesterday.
Happy Canada Day. You also got to see a very American film. This is A Star Is Born, the latest version of this story. The fourth time this story has been rolled out as a film.
Well, I know Julie Garland had a version of it. And, of course, Kris Kristofferson and Barbara. Barbara Streisand. She's like butter.
Yeah.
She's like butter. Anyway, this one has Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, or as we know him, Rocket Raccoon.
I absolutely identify him with Rocket Raccoon now. I know that he has so much more range as an actor, but when I hear that voice, I go, wait a minute. I recognize that voice.
Well, he didn't really shave at all for this either, so it still looked like Rocket Raccoon.
Trash Panda.
Yeah.
Is that
yeah.
better? No, it's way worse.
What was very interesting, I was talking to my brother about this, and he was telling me that Lucas Nelson, who is the son of Willie Nelson and his band, Promise of the Real, basically wrote the music for this.
Really?
So my brother has seen Lucas Nelson a few times. And Promise of the Real, they back up a couple of guys. So anyway, if you see this band around, you may want to go see it because they had something to do with the music. And the music was very good.
Mm-hmm.
This is a enjoyable film. This is a little darker and certainly a grown-up type film.
Yeah.
I won't give it away. There's been alcoholism is tough. It is a... it is something that is being discussed here. In addition to this, is when opportunity arises, mm-hmm. As it does for Lady Gaga, the deal is that she went for it too. And, you know, it can be painful at times. You can't save everyone. Yeah. And at that same time, recognizing that, you know, you have goals that you have to accomplish too. And so this is a nice exploration of that. I said 65 out of 100.
Okay.
And I'm sorry I didn't see this sooner.
There you go.
Steve, what did you say?
I got a chance, and you know how the Amazon Prime gives you suggestions, and sometimes you're flipping through Amazon Prime going, I want to watch something that I haven't seen before because I watch the same stuff over and over again because that's who I am. Sometimes they give me an idea of a movie, and I go, okay, I'll click on that. I clicked on one called Guava Island. This is a very unusual movie.
Now, this was released back in April.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it got some acclaim when it was released.
I agree with all of the critics who really enjoyed this one. I really enjoyed this. This is very strange, though.
So, this is about a 55-minute short
mm-hmm.
that they say is sort of a mixture of a television episode and sort of a feature-length film. So, like a tweener.
Yeah.
And this is, was it Donald Glover?
This is Donald Glover, Rihanna, Letitia Wright, who was the sister in Black Panther, and this is a very short story, 55-minute long movie,
okay,
filmed completely in Havana, Cuba.
Well, that's got to be tough.
There's some historic measures that had to be taken for them to be able to film this in Havana.
In paradise? Oh, I'm
uh-huh.
sorry.
And this is a full story, beginning, middle, and end, filled with Donald Glover's music. Childish Gambino's music is really the star of this movie. This is, in my head, this is like an extended music video, like a 55-minute, four-song mini concert from Childish Gambino. And this is beautiful. They used a different filter to make the film look like it's from 1960, 1970.
Really?
And the action here, the story is about a group of workers who are really feeling oppressed by this business leader, this tycoon in this area, on this imaginary island, Guava Island, who runs everything. This is the big boss, the Tony Soprano style big boss who runs everything. The people want to have a festival. They want to celebrate their community. They want to come together and listen to the music of Childish Gambino, which is wonderful.
Steve, is this a reference to Roadhouse? Was Dalton there trying to keep everybody nice?
Footloose? Were they trying to? I just want to dance. They just want to celebrate each other. They just want to have this community festival like we have in our communities.
Sure.
And the boss says, no, you can't have this festival. It will make all of the workers, because everybody works for me, all of the workers will stop working and be a part of this frivolous festival. And so he tries as hard as he can to stop this festival from happening. But Donald Glover's character says, no, this needs to happen. We need this to be the best workers we can be. And it does not end well. This is a sad story.
Well, I'm sorry about that. I mean, Independence Day is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say the world kind of stops, basically, I mean, we've had fireworks every night, and all the dogs have absolutely enjoyed it, but it's going to continue through the weekend also. So this idea of sort of stop and celebrating, this is midsummer, and those types are real important. And unfortunately, I mean, as this movie is sort of addressing, not everyone sees that
benefit.
Life is not just work. Life is be experienced.
And that is the message of this movie. This is a beautiful tale of workers, about people, about community, about coming together and finding a way to beat that oppression that keeps them down. And it's 55 minutes. I really suggest that you click on this one on Amazon Prime.
How lovely. Steve, you also, I'm hearing Twilight Zone music.
Yes, I got to see Us, the 2019 movie from Jordan Peele, the writer and director of Get Out from 2 years ago, the guy who brought us the latest version of the Twilight Zone. Us is very much a Twilight Zone episode with a little more horror aspect to it. It's a little more gory than the standard Twilight Zone episode.
And we reviewed this, or I'm sorry, I reviewed this like when it came out. So we're right here. Steve has seen it. Steve, this is a story that is truly about an American family going through. It starts off with what it's saying, something about there are underground communities all over the nation. What does that mean, Steve?
It eventually means something, and I still don't want to spoil this one because I'm sure a lot of our listeners have still not seen Us, even though you saw it when it came out.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's plenty of people who haven't seen it. There is a wonderful twist.
The message is don't run with scissors.
That was Stacey Shaw said, where did they get all of those scissors? This is a creepy tale about doppelgangers and about who we are and how that mirror of who we are can be held up to us and we can go, ooh, maybe we shouldn't be these people that we are.
And if you're an actor in this, you were like, this is the type of movie I wanted to be in because you really got to play. I mean, certainly your skills got well used in this film.
As a person who does not really love horror movies, I really suggest that people go see this one. This is suspenseful.
Well, let's make sure we say this. This is not for children.
This is not a children's movie. This is definitely an R-rated horror movie, but it is way more psychological and suspenseful than it is gory. But there are gory moments to
this. Absolutely. And I'm ready for his next one when he's ready to put it out.
I am ready to see what Jordan Peele has for us, that's for sure. Stacy saw a movie called The Ranger. Hey, Stacy.
Hi, guys. This week I've watched The Ranger, which showed at Fright Fest in August of 2018 and recently came to Shudder. Yes, I know, it's quite a surprise. I've watched a horror film. Anyway, Jem Wexler's directorial debut follows a group of young punks in the 1980s who hide out in the woods after making a huge mistake at a club. Whilst they're there, they meet the Ranger, played superbly by Jeremy S. Holm, who seems to know one of the group. Unfortunately, he doesn't really seem to take to the group and gives them some rules on what they should do whilst they're in his forest. As you can expect, they don't really listen to that. What follows from there on is a darkly comedic slasher film that shows great love for the classic slashers of the time, all backed by one of the best soundtracks a horror film has ever had, in my opinion. If you like punk, you need this soundtrack. The Ranger gives you all you could want from an 80s-style slasher, from the acerbic lines to hilariously dark killer catchphrases. It's possibly not for the squeamish, though the kill scenes are varied and so much fun. It's a great film that moves fast on the Ramones track towards a bonkers finale that you really won't expect. A perfect choice for horror fans on a summer's evening. This slasher is bright, smart, and fun the whole way through, as it warps the old adage, take nothing but pictures, leave nothing but footprints, kill nothing but time, on its head. Long story short, follow the darn rules or bad things will happen. But if those things do happen, turns out they make an excellent horror film. If you're interested in any more of my thoughts on films or anything else, be sure to check me out on Twitter at Films with Stacey, where you can also find the link to my website for more in-depth reviews. Until next time.
Thank you, Stacey. If you want to hear more of Stacey's reviews, you can find more of her on her webpage, specialfeatureswithstaceyshaw.wordpress.com, or she's on Twitter, Films with Stacey. All that's in our show notes. Thank you, Stacey. Opening this week, finally, we have the final chapter of this current phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's not Avengers Endgame.
It isn't.
No.
But it is.
This is the final chapter of that phase.
Spider-Man
Far From Home finally opens this week. I am very anticipatory on this one. I really think this is going to be a good movie. I have very high expectations.
This is the Spider-Man we like.
This is the Spider-Man we need.
Oh, this is an awesome story. Uh-huh. Spider-Man visits London.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he meets Mysterio.
Of course he does.
Well, anyway, Steve, this looks lovely. This opens on the 2nd, so tonight.
Yes, that's opening tonight. Let's go after we're done with the ball game.
All right, so after we see Spider-Man, tomorrow, is there a movie we can see on the 3rd?
Yes, you mentioned the fact that this is Midsummer. Happy Midsummer, everyone. And there is a movie coming out called Midsummer.
It takes place in IKEA, Steve.
It it's Scandinavia. You're right. This is
Sweden.
You're another Scandi movie, as you are apt to say. This is a follow-up to the movie Hereditary, which I haven't seen yet. You haven't seen yet. That's a little more horror than we enjoy. But remember, Kyle Hickman said he loved Hereditary, and I look forward to his review for Midsommar as well.
And this one does look like sort of maybe a little bit horror-ish. Mm-hmm. Certainly something Twilight Zone.
Cultish.
Yeah, something going on.
The boys at CF3 are certainly going to be reviewing this one for their cult finds, films, and fans.
And just to set it up, it looks like that it takes place. We're all going to go to the Midsommar Festival.
Mm-hmm. Dance around the maypole.
Well, it looks like there's like some kind of cult going on, Steve. Pagan rituals, and you could be in the middle of it.
And you could be the victim of it, is what the trailer looks like to me.
All right, so after you see Midsommar on Wednesday, this Thursday, that's Independence Day, Steve.
Happy Independence Day to all of our American listeners.
So if that's right, if that means that on Netflix,
yes,
we get dropped something that looks like it's going to be really, really good.
I am super stoked, super excited to see Stranger Things Series 3. This is the season of the 1985 year of Stranger Things, and we get all of those tropes, all of that nostalgia of the 1980s. And the kids are apparently working in a shopping mall.
Are they really?
Uh-huh.
Is everybody wearing a Bill Cosby sweater?
I believe there's going to be some very colorful costuming in this. And we get to see what's happening with the creatures in the Upside Down and what the kids are going to do to battle their demons in Season 3 of Stranger Things. I really think I will be finished watching this by Friday.
All right. So we're going to eat some watermelon, some hot dogs, have some apple pie, watch some fireworks, and then Friday, it's the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And the 5th means that Hulu is going to set us up again. So this is like entertainment week, isn't it?
Yes, it is. This one is called Into the Dark. The episode that's coming out is called Culture Shock. These are full-length films that go on to a theme that is very, very similar to The Twilight Zone. This is storytelling anthology style, and the episode that's coming out on the 5th is called Culture Shock. And in the trailer, we see a young lady who is trying to get herself into a different country from the country that she lives in, and she makes it, and everything's a little bit weird when she wakes up.
All right, so let's make sure. It's a Mexican woman,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to try to get into the United States, but oh my goodness, something's going on in the United States.
Uh-huh.
This looks excellent.
Yes,
once again,
does.
We've got a lot of good things to see.
And Creed Bratton plays the politician, the maybe forceful, vocal politician. I don't know what character he's trying to play there.
We got to meet Creed in Wisconsin at the Comic-Con in Milwaukee. And so Creed, of course, he must have left quickly to get back to be able to record this, Steve.
How TV works. I look forward to this one, Into the Dark, Culture Shock. You should go to our show notes. You should click on all of these trailers and pick which ones you're going to be watching. There's a lot of psychological thrillers going on this week, Chip. I sense a theme.
Book it.
Brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you have continued your study of geography, of regions, and this week you brought us a book called The New Geography of Jobs. This is by Enrico Moretti.
Now, Enrico is an economist at the University of California, Berkeley. He is from Italy. So the beauty of reading this is we've got a person who did not grow up in the United States. He grew up in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So his experience is, in some level, comparing his Italy to the United States and some of the challenges Italy has to the United States. The premise of this book is that we're not divided by red and blue.
Hmm.
We're basically we're starting to divide by educated and undereducated or uneducated. And you can look at one of the facts that comes out is that there was a community right outside Detroit. So Detroit is got unemployment during the 2007-2008 downturn. But a city that's just, short 15 minutes away, mm-hmm. Basically had no unemployment.
Hmm.
And so what's the difference between these areas? Well, what was different was a lot of the education. So a lot of our manufacturing cities, Chicago has a history of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. They're really hitting hard times, relatively speaking. Our areas that seem to be doing real well are Silicon Valley. So you can think of San Jose and San Francisco, that entire Oakland, that entire area
mm-hmm.
is kind of booming. In fact, the majority of patents that are being released in the United States come from that area.
Hmm.
Raleigh-Durham is another area that's doing really well. I'm from North Carolina. Every time I go back to Raleigh, there's an energy to that area. There truly is a magic that's going in that area. And you can just feel it. It's a robust area. It's a very educated area. And there are a lot of biotechnology is going on right there. And the other area is Boston. Boston, Steve! And we've got Tufts and Harvard and Boston University. And so we've got a mixture of education, but also things going on in these areas. And as I'm reading this, I could not help but think about McDonald's leaving Hamburger University out in Oak Brook and moving back downtown. When Motorola ended up being purchased by Google and divided into two companies to release those patents, they moved the headquarters from Schaumburg downtown. Mm-hmm. Boeing came downtown Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got University of Chicago, we've got Northwestern here in Loyola and DePaul and UIC. So we have great education in our area, but the idea is the magic comes when these companies, along with the people who are working in there, start having cross-pollination.
Hmm.
We're all part of the softball league, and we all got together, and you're working on this problem, and I'm working on this problem. And even though we're working on different things, we end up influencing each other and potentially impacting us in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago is not mentioned in this book particularly positively, but this book is a few years old.
Okay.
And so I think that it came out in 2012.
Okay.
And so I think that the results of that are there. I left this book thinking about my life
mm-hmm.
and where I should be located. In addition, I thought about where I should live. Now, according to this, one, you need to live in a very educated environment. So that means you need to move where smart people are
mm-hmm.
because the divide is that real. The difference between Flint, Michigan, and a wealthy community is daunting, and you can't really overcome that. Now, that is also a challenge. What do you do with these areas,
right,
Steve? But you can't solve all the problems. You can deal with your family and what you're dealing with. And I just can't help but think that, man, he really touches on a lot of tender subjects here. And we really should be looking at reading more of his work. He certainly is an incredibly bright person.
And one thing that you brought up earlier was that Europeans historically don't move very much. They're mm-hmm. pretty much stuck where they're born. And we Americans have this ability to move where the jobs are.
Exactly. We have a history of moving. And one of the trends we've seen recently is that people are not moving. And those are usually people in poor neighborhoods who are not mm-hmm. moving. He talks eventually about some subsidies that could be offered to encourage people who are out of employment in high unemployment areas to get out of those areas. Because what ends up happening in San Francisco, in D.C., in Boston, is that you have services that are there. You got people running restaurants and people working in wait staffs. You got taxi drivers. You've got Uber drivers. You've got support staff and anything and everything you can think of. The wage earnings, the difference, is about $8,000 a year, Steve.
Well, that's a big difference.
That is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Think about if you are a person who may be undereducated. That could be the difference between being what you consider middle class and not being a middle class. So that guy that is working in the cafeteria and stuff like that, his opportunities are probably greater, most likely greater, and these areas, these when I say chosen areas, they're not chosen because they've kind of naturally kind of incubated to these levels.
Right.
Maybe with a little seeds. We talk a little bit about this, about policies. Let me back up to real quick and address this. One of the real challenges with Italy is that there are some areas in the northern area, he was suggesting that there's very little unemployment, but a lot of skilled people. In the southern part of Italy, there's a lot of unemployment, but nobody is moving. In the United States, we move, and we have a history of moving there. And if you're an educated person, think about all the kids going to college. They're going to where the jobs are. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'll tell you, even if you go to great university, you head out to University of Michigan or Emory or Tulane or something like that, when you graduate, you are moving. And you're moving to where those jobs are. So they're moving to New York. They're moving to Boston. They're moving to Raleigh-Durham. They're moving to Silicon Valley. So even if you have great universities, that doesn't guarantee that those people are going to stay in that area. And Illinois, there was just an article saying 157,000 people have left the state over the last 5 years. And that means, you know, think of there are families that move in mm-hmm. and families that go out. Mm-hmm. And that's roughly, not quite, the number of kids going to college out of state. We export our college kids. Hmm. So the kids are going to Kentucky or Missouri or Kansas or wherever they're going to go to school, Iowa. And when they graduate, they're not coming back. And that is a real issue. And like I said, who knows what the future is going to hold for the city of Chicago. But I immediately thought of Sears, who mm-hmm. is out in Hoffman Estates.
Yep.
And if they're going to have a future, they need to get back downtown.
Yeah.
And they need to be part of that incubator.
Interesting.
This is a fascinating study. There are some policy recommendations on there. There is some thought about the amount of research that we do. He does not feel like we do enough research in the United States. Okay. Even though we may lead the world in research,
we're still not doing enough.
Basically, he's suggesting that we're not,
yeah.
And we may not be valuing education, even though mm-hmm. kids are going 200 grand in debt. I shouldn't say that. I think many of them are graduating about $40,000-$50,000 in debt, which is a lot of money.
That's a lot of debt.
But the point being is that they graduate from school, and they got to carry that around mm-hmm. Until they get rid of it. And education is important. And in fact, it's one of the areas that we need to make sure that we're always pushing, because our future depends upon us staying ahead of the world. And we are the great society mm-hmm. that is designing many of the things that we aren't necessarily building now. And so we're still the incubator of ideas. Entrepreneurship is still very much a part of the U.S. experience. And whether you're a person who's supporting, you're the plumbers and electricians and HVAC people and all those other things that support the building of America, or you're the brainchild who is, you know, visioning the future, there's Steve Jobs. Mm-hmm. We need lots of them. And like I said, there's going to be areas that are going to be left behind. What do you do about that? And then do you just pick up and move to those areas? Mm-hmm. This is a fascinating book. I highly recommend it.
Very good. It is The New Geography of Jobs by Enrico Moretti. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
We've got 4 days before our 5th anniversary, Chip. This is our final show of our 5th year. Happy anniversary.
Well, how awesome is that?
It's amazing.
So we went through 52 weeks, and we're starting a new.
Uh-huh.
And we've got our anniversary show coming up, and we want you to join us.
Yes.
Down at the Blue Box Cafe in historic downtown Elgin, Illinois.
That's right. On July 6th. That's a Saturday. That's this Saturday, July 6th, 6 p.m. We'll start up at the Blue Box, and we'll go till 8. And we've got Jeremy from the Grenadier Band.
Grenadier's going to play. Live bumpers, baby.
He's doing a one-man band kind of setup where he's going to be playing the drums and the guitar and singing at the same time.
In addition, this will be an opportunity to meet some of the other listeners.
That's right.
So if you've ever wondered who's listening with you,
yeah,
come out. Let's introduce you and also say hello to us.
That's right. We forming that community. We have a great community of listeners out there. Come on out and we'll party the fifth anniversary of the show. It's amazing to me.
Now we need to remind our listeners, if you haven't finished your book,
mm-hmm.
you know, Uwe,
you got 4 days left.
Uwe's not going to be very happy with you. He thinks you should have read the book by now.
4 days left. You should be reading A Man Called Uwe by Frederick Backman. It is from 2014, and several listeners have told us that we need to read this, so we're reading it. We're coming together on Saturday, 6 o'clock at the Blue Box Cafe. Come on out, and we'll discuss this book together.
And if you have a Saab, Uwe will like you.
Yeah, everybody.
But if you have a Volvo, and if you have a BMW, he's not going to like you.
Absolutely not.
He could hold a grudge, Steve.
That will break a friendship, that is for sure. Come on out, we're going to have a great time. If you're not able to join us, please send us an anniversary greeting. We would love to hear from you. Send us your good mornings and your anniversary greetings. Put them on our voicemail line. We'll play them during the show.
In addition to that, Steve, we probably have some announcements we're going to make during the show.
We have some announcements. We have some prizes. We have some surprises. It's going to be a great time. Come on out. I'm so proud of us that we've made it every Tuesday. We have not skipped a single Tuesday in 5 years of this show.
Well, there you go. We'll have to do a sixth year, Steve.
I guess we do.
All right, Steve, we got a whole bunch of people to thank.
Yes, it has been a great week. We want to thank our guest, Shelley Pack. Her movie, Chasing Molly, you should go and find that.
Good job.
A wonderful job. We want to thank the Double Clicks for doing such a fun, we had such a fun concert that we went to on Friday.
Exactly, and if you missed that, you can see them in August, Steve.
Yeah, go to thedoubleclicks.com and find out where they're coming. They're coming back to Chicago in August. You're
right. That's
right. For Fump Fest, which is so much fun. We talked to the organizer of that. We're going to have him on the show before August. We want to thank our executive producer, Ron, for coming with us to Wisconsin Comic Con.
Thanks, Ron. That have some so German food.
We had so much fun. Thank you, Ron. We appreciate you. And have some coffee.
Oh, that's right. We had some coffee. We had some beer. Und Bier bitte.
I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We're going to see you on Saturday, and then we'll have a show on Tuesday. And all of our extra scrollings that are going to be coming out with all of the interviews of all of the authors and artists that we met at Wisconsin Comic Con, be on the lookout for those. They'll be in your feed, in your podcatcher for sure. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Leave us a message. Tell us happy anniversary. We'll play it on the show. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on the iPhone podcast app, which is hard to say. We're on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio, and you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We'll see you in the future. I just